The sun is out. As a blind man makes slow and steady progress along O'Connell Street, until he collides with the broad back of a migrant worker. The recently arrived worker mutters something entirely unintelligible to the blind man, who in turn says, "Sorry." "You cross street?" the migrant man asks. The heavy foreign accent disturbs the blind man, and he thinks to say no. "You cross street?" the migrant man repeats. "Actually, yes," the blind man says, overcoming his indecision. "Big to cross," the migrant man says, and his resonant voice unexpectedly locates itself far back in the blind man's past, in a gloomy room where a black and white television shows frightened people waiting for something bad to happen. Always something bad. "I'm sorry I knocked against you," the blind man says, as the disquiet that caught him off guard dies away.
"Why sorry?"
the migrant man asks, shrugging two strong shoulders for unseen emphasis.
"The fact is," the blind man says, "I walk this street most days, and it is not my habit to bump into people, but I just had my stick stolen."
"Something is stealing?"
the migrant man inquires.
"My stick,"
the blind man replies, making a motion with his right arm to indicate what he means.
"Nobody help?"
the migrant man asks.
"Oh, it happened in a flash," the blind man says. "It was kids on a dare, I imagine. I lost my footing at the shock of it, but a kind couple helped me off the ground. Except for the loss of my stick, there was no harm done."
He realizes as he speaks that in fact his left shoulder isn't quite right, and the related elbow is beginning to announce itself.
"Any more stealing?"
the migrant worker asks.
No,
the blind man says, and reaches reflexively inside his jacket to discover his wallet is gone. He frantically searches every pocket as the green man beeps and the bustling crowd eddies around him to cross the street. A shiver of pain shoots between his shoulder blades, his elbow aches, and his left hip chips in with a stinging twinge. He stands transfixed, before cocking his head and listening intently.
"Are you there?"
he says abruptly.
"I am there,"
the migrant man says.
"Is the GPO here?"
the blind man says, flapping a gesticulating arm.
"Over here, the GPO.
GPO?
The migrant man puzzles.
"The General Post Office, big stone pillars."
The blind man half shouts in edgy agitation while shaping big with two dancing hands.
"A colonnade! A colonnades!"
he practically pleads.
"Ah, colonnade is there,"
the migrant man says. The fact that he is precisely where he expected to be helps the blind man rein in a torrent of disturbing thoughts that had threatened to run amok. For a lingering moment, however, he remains an utterly lost 11-year-old boy who has just been told that he will slowly lose his eyesight.
"You not okay?"
the migrant man says. The question barely penetrates the blind man's consciousness, but is enough to bring him back to the present and to the man with the forceful foreign accent.
"My wallet,"
he half whispers.
"Ah,"
the migrant man says, nodding two unseen nods.
"No worry, I give money."
"I don't need your money,"
the blind man snaps as he takes in the migrant man's altogether too casual acceptance of the missing wallet. Almost immediately he reproaches himself for being paranoid and for being short with the other man.
"Sure about money?"
the migrant man asks.
Yes, the blind man says. "Thank you."
But even as the words of gratitude leave his lips, a niggling doubt worms its way into his unnerved mind. It is not the blind man's nature to think ill of a fellow human being, not without good reason. But he has just bumped into this unknown person, albeit slightly, and from everything he's heard, that's all it takes for real professionals. And the wallet is undeniably missing.
We cross?
The migrant man asks as the green man beeps its next command. Unsure what to do, the blind man allows himself to be led slowly to the traffic island in the middle of the street. He doesn't protest that the other man has hold of his sore arm, because his thoughts are snagged on a seesaw of dark suspicion. While it plainly makes no sense to steal and not immediately leave the scene of the crime, a worrisome explanation might be that further advantage may be taken of an easy target. He reaches for the massive hand cradling his elbow and removes it.
That is better for me,
he says, and takes light hold of the migrant man's upper arm. The green man beeps, and the migrant man moves, but the blind man stays put.
You should leave me now,
he says.
Leave? Halfway over street?
The migrant man asks.
Yes, I think so, because I must talk to the Gardaí, to our police, and I should do it immediately. Yes, I really should go to the Gardaí now, the police, before I go home.
By repeated mention of the authorities in this breathless announcement, the blind man more than half expects something to be proven.
I help,
the migrant man says.
You will come with me to the police?
The blind man says disbelievingly.
I bring,
the migrant man says. An ambivalence tending towards disappointment takes hold of the blind man, as if the other man just isn't plain ball, and it only evaporates when it strikes him like a body blow, that the wallet wasn't taken, that it was dislodged from its secure inside pocket when he stumbled to the ground, and that it fell from his jacket either then or shortly afterwards.
I bring,
the migrant man repeats.
Thank you, but actually there's no need now,
the blind man says.
You see,
what else I am doing?
The migrant man interrupts.
I come your country find work, no work. Everybody say, recession, recession. Man, they say me, you come bad time. I think is true.
It is true.
The blind man agrees with emphatic accentuation, as if in atonement.
But today, the migrant worker says, do good thing with blind man. Find job.
If only it worked that way,
the blind man says.
Not true, I know.
The migrant worker laughs.
Come, I bring. I see police house before.
It occurs then to the blind man that the wallet might be waiting for him in the little Garda outpost at the top of the street. Not overly hopeful, but thinking it proper anyhow to report the loss, he takes hold of the migrant man's arm. On this escorted expedition to report the incident, the blind man descends once more into the gloomy front room of the family home. He remembers how his folks tried their best, how they spent time with him and let him stay up late at weekends to watch the snowy screen, all the while encouraging him to talk about his illness. But he wouldn't, not even when the war films faded into foggy invisibility and the menacing voices grew more sinister, more frighteningly ominous, and became in the end an unseen and malevolent presence from a foreign land. Always a foreign land. It wasn't until his eyes eventually stopped letting in light that he experienced his first breakdown and began to talk about it. That was long ago, and the road to recovery was equally long and bedeviled by setbacks.
Soon here,
the migrant man says.
Yes,
The blind man answers, fully aware of his whereabouts by the differing smells and noises issuing from cafes and shops, and just beginning to be aware of the ongoing fragility of his hard-won recovery. His stick and wallet are missing, so there's reason to be unsettled, but it escapes him why he came so close to downright collapse. And yet, he hadn't fallen totally apart, a fact to be acknowledged and gratefully accepted. Knowing always to focus on the positive, he turns his thoughts to the benevolent stranger at his side. Almost immediately, he is shamefaced as a man can be, as he recalls his earlier ugly misgivings.
"Police house," the migrant man says, and stops walking. "I go now. Take, and be safe to home."
The blind man is startled by something being slipped into his jacket pocket. When he understands what is happening, his reaction is instant.
"Wait, please wait," he says. "Hello, hello."
"Hello?"
The migrant man answers from a short distance.
"You good now? Police house here."
No, please wait,"
the blind man says, holding out the money.
"You mustn't give me this. You mustn't give me this."
The migrant man approaches and lands two mighty hands on the blind man's shoulders.
"Is small," he says,
and rumbles a laugh and walks away. Inside the Garda office, the blind man is asked to wait. He slumps into a plastic chair, and his hip complains and his elbow aches, and he wonders if his jacket might not be dotted with dandruff, and whether or not there are bits of breakfast clinging to his beard. In so wondering, he recognizes the return of the painfully insecure individual he used to be. He has no intention of becoming that pathetic creature again. So he sits up straight and remembers his strengths and knows not to be sorry for himself. He's had a scare, but it's over. He decides to never use side streets again, however well known, and he waits with increasing self-possession to put on the public record the loss of his belongings. He suffers a slight setback when told that the taking of the stick was a setup, that the kind people who picked him off the ground also picked his pockets. It makes him feel old and foolish, and it does him little good to hear that he is not the first victim of these particular operators. But when he steps out of the Garda office, it is with the resolute intention of starting the day anew, because he has learned to leave behind what he cannot change. So he makes slow and easy progress along to the GPO and stops, fully certain of where he is, and uses his outstretched left arm as a short organic stick to manoeuvre through the fluid pedestrian stream towards the crossing. Perhaps because of his apparent self-assurance, no one asks the blind man if he needs assistance. When he judges the curb to be close by, he stands and listens for the next staccato signal to cross. He thinks about the Good Samaritan slipping money into his pocket and suffers a deep pang of remorse. He didn't even get the man's name. But he knows to leave alone what cannot be rectified. So he tunes in to the rolling traffic and waits to hear it slow and stop. It slows and stops.
"Where you go?"
the migrant man says. The sun is out, as a blind man and a migrant man sit in sporadically interrupted silence over a basket of buffalo wings and two glasses of stout in a dimly lit pub on the riverbank, not far from the Ha'penny Bridge. And as the blind man wrestles with his past, and the migrant man grapples with his future. Out beyond the door, in the uncommonly bright light of a rarely prolonged summer's day, a green man beeps a ceaseless human tide across the street and over the bridge and back, as if neither past nor future were of any consequence, as if the present were all that mattered, as if the here and now is all there ever is.
That was All There Ever Is by Toby McGrath, read by Carl O'Neill. A shortlisted entry from the 2014 RTE Radio Francis McManus Short Story Competition. The series of this year's 25 shortlisted stories continues tomorrow with Bedtime Routine by Simon Rochford, read by Aaron Monaghan. The shortlisted stories can be heard on the programme website on rte.ie/radio1. The series producer of the Francis McManus Short Story Competition is Cliona Ní Iomlán.